We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back here on the program once again, Michael Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the U of I. He's also a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and he is a scientist who's interested in studying birds. He's an avian ecologist, has done a lot of research around the Midwest and other places looking at avian ecology, conservation, interested in migration and all the things that affect bird migration and where it is that they stop and what are good conditions for birds. We have talked with him before about some of the research that he's been involved in. And also, we welcome people's questions about birds that you have seen or bird stories that have been in the news lately. All you have to do is give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Or if you'd like to send in an email, you can do that too, will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. And I know that Mike will do his best to answer your questions.
Sure.
Thanks very much for being here. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Well, I got a story for you here now. At our house, there's a place on the front of the house right beside the front door where we hang a decorative wreath. And we got one there. It looks like it's made out of forsythia. So about 10 days ago, I guess, we started noticing that there was a cardinal showing a lot of interest in it. We didn't think all that much about it. So one day I come up to the front and I realize this bird has built a nest. And I look in there and there's eggs in there. So I think, well, okay, we are now hosting a cardinal. I'm not gonna disturb this at all. So the only time she gets rousted is when the paper comes and when the mail comes. And most of the time, we've actually started going out the side of the house not to bother Mom. So, you know, something happens, particularly if somebody comes up to the porch, she'll go off. But then later she'll come back, and so she's been sitting on the nest. So I'm thinking, well, how is this going to go? And the thing I really wonder is if those eggs hatch, then will she actually attack anybody who comes close to the nest?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. There's actually some more basic research on that these days where people have been doing research to see if birds can identify individual people. Mm-hmm. And so there's some research out of the University of Washington and the University of Florida where they did tests with not cardinals per se, but mockingbirds and crows and other things. And it turns out that individual birds can identify you. So as you come into your house, they might say, oh, you're not a threat. But maybe your paper boy is a threat to her. So and when she has young, you know, they typically the longer in the breeding cycle they go, the more they have invested in those young, and so they get more aggressive. But if they perceive you as less and less of a threat, then you know she might chip a couple times, but she's unlikely to go after your head. But you know, new person comes in, they might get really mad. And there's other studies about this just came out in urban areas showing that birds in urban areas have bigger brains and able to the idea is that the bigger brain, they're able to process more information and kind of understand what's good and what's bad. And that allows them to live in urban areas. So cardinals is a great example because they've moved into urban areas over the last 100 years here in Illinois. And as they moved in there, there's probably selection pressure for them to start realizing you're a good person or you're a bad person. You know, a kid's probably not a good person because they're going to come mess with a nest or shoot him at him or something like that. Whereas an older adult might be a nice person. So so you have an experiment going on here. We'll see how they respond to you.
We'll see. It's actually because it's sheltered, there's a covered porch. So it's actually not a bad place. It's sheltered. It's out of the weather.
Right.
And most of the time, you know, no one is bothering her. But I don't know how in the world she decided that was the place.
Well, it's a good spot. I mean, right now, you know, the leaves are coming out on a lot of trees. But if you try to put a nest in a tree without leaves, you're raccoon food essentially. Whereas if you put a nest underneath a shelter or next to a garage, something like that, it's less likely, you know, these predators are going to find it. So I think as we go forward, a lot of birds are going to be nesting real close to people, so underneath their porches or in their back garages. So
okay, well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Next time I see you, I'll let you know. We have a caller here, somebody in Belgium, so we'll go right over there. Line 4. Hello.
Hello, and good morning, gentlemen. I have a bit of a question that I've noticed this year, and maybe it's just from what I've done, okay, and we'll discuss that maybe. I started with this on this piece of property I've been on now for about 17 years, and it was a little farmstead that was used with cattle, and a cow and a calf and garden. And when I moved into it, I bought it from my father-in-law. So we've been associated with this piece of property now, 60 years, something like that, 70, right through there. Because we don't eat beef so much anymore, we've let the pasture grow up, and it's now become, I wanted it to be a prairie, but it's become a riverine more type of woodland because there's a creek that flows through it. And I had a neighbor who had enormous number of cats on about the same size piece of property. That lady has gone into foreclosure and has left, and so have the cats, and I've encouraged them by chopping them and sending them to the Humane Society. And I noticed this year, for the first time, that I have a lot more birds. I mean, a lot more birds. I mean, all kinds of birds. I love looking at birds, but I'm not really a very good birder because I can't tell you the names of them. I just know I like them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm wondering, is this a better year for birds? Or because I have cut down on the predators so dramatically, they've decided to come and stay in our little area? Because I've produced a lot of habitat for them, but I don't feed them. They have to get their own food. I just have given them a lot of natural habitat.
Right. Well, from year to year, there's a local variation in bird abundances based on weather and stuff. And so it could be a slightly better year. But I think on the bigger, on the larger level, providing that habitat is great. And there's a lot of evidence out there that cats are really bad for birds. Some estimates suggest 1 billion birds are killed every year by cats. There's a lot of people in the bird world that really dislike cats because a lot of these outdoor cats and kind of semi-feral cats are a problem. And it could be that over time, as you start reducing these cat populations, birds that find this spot realize it's good quality habitat. So typically what happens is if you're an old bird, you typically know the ropes and you know to stay away from cats. But it's your chicks that tend to get eaten. And birds tend to show site fidelity, the tendency to return to a spot year after year based on how many young they produce. So if you remove these cats, you can kind of get a cascade going where birds are producing offspring. Those offspring are living. They come back. Some of their offspring come back. And you start kind of building this capacity. And so it could be one of these things where everything's kind of come together. You have really good habitats. The year was good. You know, this year we have had a lot of rain, a lot of storms. And it's definitely certain areas, just because of how the storm patterns go and flooding goes, have more birds than others.
Yeah, we're over here. Well, we're right on the eastern border of Illinois, and the Wabash Flyway is not very far away. We are, I'm sure, associated with that because just north of of Danville here, which is just right near where I'm at, they have that heron park. And this year we went and by there, and there's sandhill cranes up there. There's eagles. There's everything this year. Things that I hadn't seen before, and there are people who come from over Champaign from the university, and you see them sitting there watching a lot of things because that's where I learned what some of these birds were because a birder from over there came over and showed us her little glass, binocular thing, and monocular is one of those spotting scopes.
Yep.
And, it's amazing. I didn't know all those were there, and she said it's been a pretty good year.
Yep. Yeah, you're in a great area. So there's a lot of conservation going on that Danville area, Kennecuck Park, down at Forest Glen.
Yep.
Yeah, those are great areas. So they're really doing great management, building up the bird populations. And it's one of these things where it might not be a linear increase. So it might be they reach some threshold and all of a sudden birds start showing up everywhere. And so that's what we're hoping that's kind of happening over there along the Wabash. So
thank you very much, sir.
Right, thank you. Other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our guest is Mike Ward. He's assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, and we're talking about birds. You just you said before we got going here that you just done last Saturday a statewide bird survey.
Yep. Last Saturday was the spring bird count in Illinois. So we try to get people out to every county in Illinois, and this has been going on for 26, 27 years. And around here, throughout Illinois, we have great participation. I do areas over kind of where I'm from in western Illinois, and we went out for a day and saw 150 species of birds. I'm sure they saw more than that in Champaign. And right now is the prime time. So even today, in my yard out in St. Joe, there was lots of migrating warblers. Here on campus today, there's Tennessee warblers, Nashville warblers. So we're in the prime time. That's why we have this spring bird count. In the spring, we really migration is really focused in a couple weeks. In the fall, it's kind of spread out over a month or so. But in the spring, this is the time when you can go out and you can see 100 species easily. And so we take advantage of that in order to kind of monitor breeding birds, but also migratory birds with the spring bird count. And so it's great. It's a great PR thing, or it's good to get people in the field, but also we're getting some interesting data that over long terms we can determine, you know, are birds migrating back earlier? We think spring's coming a bit earlier, and, you know, climate change, and so is that affecting some of these birds or not? And so it's great. You know, it's a great bird watching opportunity, and also it provides some data for us.
Yeah. Well, you also said that you have been trying to take a look at what the relationship between agricultural practices and what farmers are doing, and then what kind of habitat or, you know, stopping over place that provides for birds when they're passing through, and what birds like and what they're most attracted to.
Oh, yeah. So we've been working on a lot of projects looking at long-term bird populations in Illinois, and you know, we kind of knew this from the get-go, but it really dawned on us that if we're really going to achieve true conservation and a lot of successful conservation in Illinois, we have to get the agricultural community on board, and some of these agricultural practices have to be beneficial. And so we have some students out there now looking at no-till soy, you know, these fields where people don't go in and till it. They just they go in and plant in a no-tilled area. And right now with all this rain, the farmers aren't getting the fields. Some of these fields are weedy messes, which I'm sure probably drive some of the farmers crazy, but they're great habitat for birds. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine how if it's wet and people delay planting for a couple weeks, you know, birds can reproduce really quickly. That could result in tens of thousands of more birds in the landscape than would have been there if they would have got out there May 1st instead of May 10th. And so we have I have a grad student out there right now walking these fields looking for bird nests, and it's amazing the diversity she finds out there. We're also doing work with golden plovers. We walk around fields in the middle of the night in east central Illinois trying to find these birds that winter in the southern part of South America and breed in the Arctic. But they spend a large amount of their – well, when they migrate, they spend a couple weeks here in east central Illinois in corn and soybean fields and trying to figure out, you know, why, given the opportunities they have between the, you know, South America and the Arctic Circle, they decide to stop in east central Illinois. And so that's – it's challenging, but, you know, it's interesting because we can start figuring out the variables that drive this. We can improve our management.
Yeah. Well, is the idea that you might even if certain kinds of things that farmers are doing, you find that those are good, is it possible that you could maybe make the argument to farmers saying, well, look, you know, if it's all the same to you doing it either this way or doing it this way, how about doing the way that's good for
right.
the birds?
Well, you can. I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, farming is a business and they got to make a profit. And so if we find out that, like for right now with the plovers, we find that no-till soy may have more invertebrates, more worms, and that really benefits a lot of birds. And there's lots of USDA programs, conservation practices like waterway filter strips, erosion control. It would be nice to actually implement something else where it says, all right, in association with the subsidy for this, if you no-till – one of the benefits of no-tilling is for wildlife. So right now you're getting – some benefit for erosion, but try to integrate wildlife and conservation in some of these farm bill practices and try to expand that. You know, I think a lot of the farmers actually, we go out in a lot of these properties and they're really interested in what we're doing out there with the birds. And a lot of them know the birds are out there and they're really interested in how they can help. But they, you know, they can only help to a certain point when they still got to get the corn in there and the beans. Yeah. And so we're trying to take a holistic approach where we work with both the farmers and the local level, but try to work on a federal level to try to get some programs that may actually be beneficial.
Okay. Let's go to a caller here. Atlanta, Illinois, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a whippoorwill question.
Sure.
We live on next to a dedicated nature preserve, and through LIP money, we've opened up the oak timber. And after 20-so years or so, we are starting to hear a whippoorwill again at night. So that's amazing. And the call I heard the first time was like, whippoorwill were continued at a fairly rapid rate. Now, last night we walked down about 8:15, and it sounded the same, but there was a space between whippoorwill, rather than a continuous thing. Is it still the same bird?
Probably. So they kind of show up and start advertising, and then once they kind of establish territories, they might start varying their whippoorwill calls, and sometimes they get a little tuck note in between that. You're really lucky. Whippoorwills are really in decline in Illinois. We just wrote a book looking at long-term changes in birds in Illinois.
I have that book right here by me, An Illinois Bird, Birds, A Century of Change, and it's just a fantastic book. Your team, one of the nicest things the Natural History Survey has ever done as far as for the layman, is just outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks. We had a section at the end where we all had to pick a bird we think is going to go extinct in the next 50 years, and my pick was actually whippoorwill because I'm so concerned about them. Because of what you're talking about, we have to – these oak savannas, we have to clear out and make them more open. That historically, a lot of our oaks were – oak hickory forests were oak savannas, and also moth populations are crashing. So if we have opportunities in areas that have kind of a natural landscape and we can open up some of these oak savannas, that's the only way we're going to save our whippoorwills. So you're lucky.
Yeah, we are lucky, and like a 20-year absence, it's amazing they were back. I just about had a heart attack when I heard it the first time. So, again, thank you for that. The call variation now, it explains why, you know, it probably has established itself here, and the call has changed a little bit. And the book is outstanding, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we have as our guest here in this hour, Focus, Michael Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He's also a scientist who works at the Illinois Natural History Survey. He's an avian ecologist, and occasionally he's here on the program. We talk about birds. Whatever questions you have, I know he'll try to give you an answer. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, what are some of the other birds that are particularly considered to be endangered to the point where you might think that they might actually be extinct?
Some grassland birds, bobolinks, upland sandpipers. Upland sandpiper is a bird that there's only in the 1950s, their estimated population was in the hundreds of thousands around here. Now there's, maybe 100 left in Illinois nesting. It's the birds that need a lot of diversity. They like grasslands, but they just don't like tall grass. They like tall, medium, and short altogether. And so we typically go somebody has a grassland, they manage it all the same. It's all tall. It's all short. It's all whatever. And what we need is a heterogeneity out there. And it's really obvious, at least to me, if you go down to the prairie chicken sanctuary down by Effingham, they have the best grassland bird community in Illinois by far and the only place that has prairie chickens. And it's not because they have huge expansions of grassland. It's because they have diversity. They have a nice, maybe a large area of short grass, large area of tall grass, and then they have corn and they have soybeans all intermixed. And so it's a heterogeneity. We lose that. We pick areas in Illinois we want to conserve, and we do a good job maybe putting a prairie there, but then we have huge expanses of corn and soy, and we need to kind of get some more heterogeneity out there for these birds to make it. And I hope we can do that, but there's really no obvious trend toward that in Illinois, and so that's why we pick some of these birds that may go extinct.
Okay. Muhammad, another call here. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've heard, maybe right or maybe wrong, that there's a wetland preserve over by Danville where people can watch for birds and whatever inhabits wetland.
Yep.
Is there one there, and whereabouts is it?
Yeah, there is. There's a Heron Park, which is probably the best one. It's in the north end of Lake Vermilion, and the name of the road is Newell Road. And you can pull down on Newell Road, and there's a pull-off there, there's a boardwalk, there's an observation tower. There's a sandhill crane that's breeding over there, which is pretty amazing for this far south. I think its little baby died in some of the last storms, but it'll probably re-nest. But that's a great area. There's a heron rookery. There used to be a bald eagle nesting there. There might still be one there. The thing with wetlands is that we've really lost most of our wetlands in Illinois. So when you find a wetland, it's usually great. Right now, just last week, there was a white-faced ibis, which is a very rare bird in Illinois. It's a tall bird. It's really dark. It's got a long bill. It's decurved. That occurs in the south. It showed up at the sewage lagoon behind the dairy farm on South Farms. So not exactly the high-quality wetland, but, that's what we have. There's a little wetland out on Curtis Road by the 9-hole golf course that's just a wet little, looks not much to the layperson, but there's all kinds of birds. The only place you're going to see them on their route between the Arctic Circle and South America is right there. There's dunlins there, swimming palmated plovers. And so if you can – the Danville site's great. Heron Park's a great site. It's nice. It's easy to walk through. But even around Mahomet or Champaign, you find a wet area this time of year, you can really get lucky and see some amazing birds.
How do I get to this one at Vermilion Lake?
So I usually go turn off it in Tilton and not Tilton. It's you turn off on 150 on Martin Luther King Drive, and then there's a road that heads up north toward Henning, the Henning Road. You take that north, and then there's a Newell Road. You just turn right. You could probably, if you have access to the internet, just Google it, and it'll pop up. My directions are probably pretty bad. So
Google
Heron Park in Vermilion
Heron
County.
Park.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. And again, the questions welcome, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that to will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, I'm sure that people will remember now, I'm not sure how many years ago this was, maybe 5-6 years ago, there was a lot of news concerning the ivory-billed woodpecker. And this was a species that generally had been thought to be extinct.
Right.
And there were some people who said they thought maybe, just maybe, this was pretty tentative, that they had found it and had found some. And then, in fact, in a very out-of-the-way place, they managed to find them. Well, then there was a lot of controversy. Well, did they or didn't they? No one could, after that, no one could confirm it. Well, just now, I think fairly recently, again, somebody is saying that they think that they have recorded the call, which is apparently pretty distinctive, and it have some, I guess, fairly grainy video. I've seen some stills from it. I don't know how you would tell anything from it. But again, now there's some people that are saying, no, they really think that this is it.
Right. It's a tricky one. As a bird watcher, you know, I'm very excited. It'd be great if that bird was still around. But as more of a scientist, you have to wonder, you know, the evidence, they have a really distinctive call. But other birds give that call, and very similar to that call.
Mm-hmm.
And if you record in a swamp in, like this last one was down in Mississippi or somewhere, if you record in a swamp for thousands of hours and you analyze that, just by chance, you're going to get a blue jay that sounds like an ivory-billed woodpecker, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures are so bad. You know, the way I look at it is, if there's an ivory-billed woodpecker out there and there's like a handful left, in what we usually do as both in science and birdwatchers, we play tapes. So you're an iPod. You play the song to a bird, and the bird jumps out. So if you're an ivory-billed woodpecker that's wandering around the swampland of, you know, southeast U.S., and then you hear another ivory-billed woodpecker, you think you're going to go out there as fast as you can because you're going to be – I mean, you haven't seen anyone else. So I don't – I mean, to me, if they don't respond to these calls, it's just very – I'm very skeptical of most of these reports. But there's some really top-rate avian ecologists that have no reason to lie that think they've seen it. But, you know, it's one of these things where the mind can play tricks. So these pictures are pretty bad. I hope they're out there, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, I guess that part of the deal is that they like a particular kind of environment, and those conditions are just very hard to find now. Even though I suppose there are some places that are very remote that people don't go that are very difficult to get to. So then you think, well, yeah, maybe there's one there, and it's just living, and nobody's just gone there.
Right. Yeah, that's the whole quest for birdwatchers. So the Appalachia Swamp down in Louisiana, there's some other, the White River in Arkansas, huge areas. It's hard to access, and, you know, you just hope they're out there. And so you're hoping so much, I think sometimes you might see a pileated or some other large woodpecker. And but, you know, if they are, you know, it helps to preserve that. So whether they're there or not, the main outcome should be we're trying to preserve these large bottom line forests. So.
Yeah, okay. We had a caller back from this was our friend in Belgium. He said there's another way to get to Heron Park. Take Route 1 until you get to the Walmart, then turn left.
Oh, that sounds easy.
I can't vouch for those directions. But anyway, you can try it. But I think, as you say, if you have web access, you can probably go onto the web and just put in Heron Park, Vermilion County, and and you should be.
There's lots of resources out there for bird watchers these days to kind of find out where birds are and go check out. So especially around here, there's a very active bird watching community. And so you can definitely find out where the birds are at.
Yeah, all right. Well, again, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana. We have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. You can send us an email to will-talk. That's just like it sounds, will-talk@illinois.edu. And our guest for the program is Michael Ward. He's a scientist with the Illinois Natural History Survey. He's also assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences here at the U of I. When I was looking for things we might talk about, I was sort of looking back at birds in the news and went back and found some stories, and maybe people will remember. Around the beginning of the year, there were a lot of stories about big bird die-offs. There was one in particular, and I think if I remember right, this was in Arkansas, where the story was thousands of birds just dropped out of the
sky. Yeah.
And people were very concerned. They were wondering, well, what exactly was that all about? And going back now, having read some of the things that were just published after that, one of the things that's really striking is that a lot of scientists looked at it and said, well, you know, things like that actually aren't that unusual. What was unusual in this particular case was it just happened to happen where there were people there to see it. But apparently stuff like that happens fairly often.
It does. It's just the age we live in with the ability to get information out very quickly that if someone finds 20 roving blackbirds dead, they're really concerned about it. And, you know, the one in Arkansas, I think the story goes that a lot of these birds roost together, so they sleep together in trees, and people get mad about that. And so someone had thrown some explosives out there, and obviously, just like us, if someone wakes you up and you run from your house, you run into things, and these birds had run into other trees and had died. But at that same time, some other people had found some dead starlings, and people had thought, well, it's terrible weather, or, you know, they have all these ideas. But usually it comes down to someone's using poison or someone's trying to blow up stuff around roosts and kill large numbers at one point in time. You know, even here in Champaign, people bring in a lot of dead birds. And, you know, sometimes they concentrate in certain time periods. And usually it's nothing to be concerned about, but there is a lot of people around that will test them to see, because sometimes there's some chemical spill or something like that we need to be aware of to kind of mitigate the effect. But most of the time it's just nature taking its course.
Yeah. So. Well, that's I think, though, that some of the articles that I read did really make the point that one way or another that humans and human activity, either it's how we live, it's that we put buildings up and other things for them to run into. It's, maybe we get irritated if there are too many of – we think there are too many of them,
right.
And that we do things to try to get rid of them or to bother them or so they won't roost in large numbers. One way or another, it's – a lot of it has to do with things that people
do. And when birds get in large numbers, there's natural occurring parasites and diseases that get in these populations, and it's a natural process. So sometimes, especially in wetland birds, some species will die off and they'll find a lot of dead birds and you get really worried about it. But, you know, there's these density-dependent factors that when populations get big, they kind of regulate themselves. And so a lot of times it's maybe almost a positive thing that these populations are actually rebounding to the point where probably the weaker birds are being culled from the population by some of these diseases. And that's – up in Chicago, there's some nice big rookeries of different wading birds, and that sometimes happens up there.
Yeah. Well, and also I guess you have to wonder – it's like you had said before, as we've talked about before, if there's been – loss of habitat, then if they're going to survive, the birds are going to have to get used to living around people and moving into urban areas where maybe in the past that wouldn't have been their preference, but now they don't have a lot of choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The kind of going back to this book and this 100-year survey, we're still analyzing, and I'll be analyzing this data for years to come. But one of the really neat things we're working on right now is looking at over the last 100 years in Illinois, the winners and the losers. And the winners are all birds that have gone from maybe being a grassland bird or a forest bird to becoming a city bird. So mourning doves or cardinals or red-bellied woodpeckers. And there's a couple examples, not very many, of birds. And one is the northern flicker, which is a woodpecker that's around town. They used to call it the yellow hammer. And back in the 1900s, the people that did the survey, it was just a young guy. After he did the survey, he was asked to give a talk on campus. And he was very, very nervous, apparently. So he wrote these note cards about what he was going to say for every picture he put up there for all the scientists on campus. And for the flicker, he said, if every bird goes extinct in Illinois, the flicker will never go extinct. It's so linked with humans. It's in every town. It's only found around humans. Well, look at the data. That's true. In 1900s, it was associated with humans and in towns. But between 1900s and 1950s, it left towns and went back out to natural areas. And because of that, it's in huge declines. So because a lot of natural areas are going, I mean, this is a bird kind of like red-headed woodpecker that is showing amazing declines, and it's a bird we really need to be worried about. On the other extreme, you had red-bellied woodpecker and downy and hairy and pileated, which are other woodpeckers that went the other way. They went from being a forest bird to being – they live around humans okay, and their populations are doing great. So as we go forward – we really need to think about our impact, especially in Illinois, where we have limited natural areas, our impact on birds and how birds respond to us, so how behaviorally they change. And I think, you know, we see Cooper's hawks in town now. We see a lot more hawks around town. That's going to be the way of the future, I think, as these birds move into town. And because of that, there's a kind of responsibility on home and people in towns now. You know, before we could have thought, well, we can mow our yard, we can do whatever. There's not going to be animals back here. Now, you know, where I'm at, I got five foxes running around my house. I have a no-mow area where I have a bunch of birds and little snakes and toads back there. And so I think it's great because it gives the opportunity to kind of bring some nature into towns where people sometimes miss that nature. So.
Yeah. Well, this morning in this hour of focus, we're talking with Mike Ward. He is an assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. We're talking about birds and looking for bird questions. And we'll have some more conversation with Mike Ward after a short break. This is Focus.
I'm David Teal from WILL-TV. Join me this October for a Friends of WILL tour of London, Yorkshire, and Wales. We'll see stately homes and splendid scenery with connections to some of our most popular TV programs. Three-night stays in each of our locales offer us plenty of free time. Call us at 217-333-7300 or visit will.illinois.edu for more information.
This is Focus. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings, and we have 10 different topics every week. And let me just mention that tomorrow morning on the show, in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be talking with novelist Mary Doria Russell. She is also an anthropologist by her training, an award-winning writer. She's written a number of best-selling novels. Her first two were actually science fiction novels, and her newest is Western. And the central character in that is Doc Holiday, and the title of the book is Doc. So we'll talk about that book tomorrow morning at 10. Also tomorrow, we'll have another visit to what we're calling the Deep Archives of Focus, something that we have been doing to celebrate 30 years on the air, going back to some of the oldest shows that we have in our recorded archive, but these are not shows that are on the web archive. They are recorded on cassette, and they've been sitting packed in cardboard boxes, and we thought it'd be interesting to dig into them and to find some shows and group them somewhat according to topic, and tomorrow some shows talking about media and patterns of ownership and the idea that the media has some responsibility to serve the public interest. So you'll hear selections from two interviews, one with Newton Minow from 1995. He was a former FCC chairman, and then also a guy who's very well known for writing about concentration of ownership in media, Ben Bagdikian. That's an interview from 97. You can go to our website and catch up on past programs you may have missed, and you can take a look at the schedule for the days and weeks ahead. It's WILL.illinois.edu. This morning in this hour of Focus, our guest is Mike Ward. He is a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey. He's an avian ecologist. He's been here before on the show to talk about birds, and that's what we're doing. If you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and we also have the email will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a couple people here to talk with. First up, we have someone in Posotum. This is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I got two porch nesters. A robin built a nest in my wife's decorative wreath, and I have a mourning dove that we've had that's not probably the same one, but I've had mourning doves on our porch for years, and it's amazing how much they propagate. It's a good thing, 'cause you don't seem to be the brightest bird. But my main question was about, I think I had an American Red Start. I'm not very computer literate, and the best I could tell from the book that I had on birds, because it was black with bright orange and a little white underneath. And could you give me any information on that bird?
Yep. So Red Starts just showed up a couple weeks ago, and there's some that nest around here, but mainly they're migrating through, nesting up in Wisconsin, Michigan. And the males will be, when you see them, they're going to show a lot of bright red, kind of orange and black. And there's a little white on their tail underneath. And so, if you saw that bird in the last couple weeks, it's probably most likely an American Red Start kind of moving through, migrating through. They're pretty common warbler. They're not the most common, but they're kind of in the middle there in terms of how common of a warbler they are. So.
Well, thank you. That's the first one I'd ever seen, and you're right, it must have been migrating through because I just saw it one day, but I was just sitting here, and all of a sudden I saw the black with the bright orange-red, and
yep.
So then I had to get my book and see what it was. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed the show.
Okay,
thanks.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And again, we'll talk with someone in Charleston next. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wonder if you could explain a phenomenon I've seen many times. It's a big bird being dogged by a little bird as it flies. The big bird's probably a hawk.
Yep.
Around here, and I don't know what the little bird would be, but as the hawk flies, the little bird's just zipping all around it and dogging it.
Yep, yep.
Do you know what's going on?
I do. Well, I think I do. The little birds, especially wrens, red-winged blackbirds, the hawks themselves probably aren't much of a threat to them, but they're a threat to their young. So we now know that a lot of the nests around here, the babies get eaten out of them by raptors. So a red-tailed hawk will fly by and say, oh, there's a little snack down there of red-winged blackbird chicks. So it'll come down. And to get them away, the birds just get very angry, dive bomb, peck at it, try to drive the red-tailed hawk away, with the idea being that they're just going to bother it, just going to badger it until it moves somewhere else. And so when they do have a nest, that hawk's not around because they don't want to get badgered, so it won't eat their young. And so you see this with both owls and hawks, and it's pretty interesting phenomenon where you can have a red-tailed hawk that's pretty big and could eat a house wren, you know, could kill it easily, but that house wren flies up, lands on its back, and it's pecking on it and to drive it away. And it's probably a response to trying to get these birds away from their nest so they don't eat their babies.
Well, that's a good explanation. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. And let's see, next caller would be line number 3, and this is someone back here in Urbana. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. In Urbana, line 3, go ahead.
This is Urbana?
Yes.
I've just inherited a family farm near Springfield, and 50 years ago when I was a child there, we had these wonderful mourning doves that is my favorite sound. And now you don't hear a one. I wondered what I could do to attract them.
Yep. So I don't know what was at the farm before, but kind of letting it get kind of messy is what we're promoting these days. So letting some annuals grow up, getting some shrubs out there, just trying to get some heterogeneity out there. So if you have an area that used to be a hedgerow, let the hedgerow come back. Let it grow up in, you know, dogwoods or other kinds of trees. And getting that – take a couple years, get that stuff to grow up, and – mourning doves will come back. There's a lot of mourning doves out there. They're really responsive to restoration. So if you get a little bit of these annuals out there, a little bit of messiness, just don't mow an area for, you know, until – for a year. That's enough to bring back a lot of these birds.
Okay. Someone said, you know, they like seeds. So, you know, in the 50 years ago, there was wheat and oats and all kinds of things, and now there's not. But could I just plant a couple of rows of seeds and sunflowers and stuff like that? Would that make a difference or
yeah,
not?
I mean, that would probably help. I mean, that'll definitely attract some mourning doves and some goldfinches. But I would maybe plant a couple of sunflowers, maybe some other native plants, and just let some annuals come up and just, again, kind of be messy with maybe a few plants, you know, are going to produce a lot of seeds. And I think you'll get a really good response.
Okay. What's an example of an annual? Thank you so much. I don't know any. My daughter's a landscape architect, so I don't know anything.
So they're kind of weeds. So like foxtail, okay. Smartweed, the stuff that's going to come up, you don't have to plant it. It's just going to come up from the seed bank. So.
Oh, just don't mow.
Yeah,
okay.
Just don't mow. So.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Very,
all right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I think it's the kind of stuff that farmers generally want to get rid
of.
They don't want that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go next to Oakwood, line 4. Hello.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi. Hello.
I just was curious. You mentioned flickers a little while ago, and I wondered if there'd been any studies or, you know, about the correlation between chemical applications to lawns and, you know, them deciding to go back out of town.
Yeah, that's a great question. Because it happened kind of before people were too worried about conservation, there's not a lot of great studies, but flickers are unique among woodpeckers in that they forage on the ground. So most woodpeckers are banging on the side of a tree. Flickers will be on the ground probing down in the dirt for ants. It turns out that a lot of our native ants have been are gone, and we have invasive ants around here now, and they're really susceptible to some of these pesticides and herbicides. So as the invasive ants moved in and as synthetic pesticides came about in the 50s, it probably did make urban areas not as hospitable for flickers, but also at the same time, you know, these trees grew up that were better for other woodpeckers. So the flickers probably, you're right, I mean, flickers probably left urban areas because of a combination of things. One being our ants are all invasive ants and not what the flickers want. And we have so much stuff on our lawns these days, especially in the 50s. We're doing better now. But if you look at the data for how much we applied pesticides in the 50s, it's staggering. And that's probably definitely hurt the flickers.
I'll bet. Also, anybody else noticed big increases here in cowbirds?
Yeah, cowbirds are doing well. Cowbirds, you know, lay their eggs in other birds' nests, and they're a problem. And they are definitely moving into all habitats in Illinois. They're already there, and their numbers are definitely increasing. So, they're showing they're not hurting, that's for sure. And they're definitely maybe increasing in some areas.
Okay. Well, good show, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go right on. We have about 10, 12 minutes left. And next caller is in Effingham. Line one. Hello.
Yes, thank you. And this is rather a trivial question, but for years I've had a pair of redbirds in my yard, cardinals, and I loved them. And about 6 months I noticed that the mother was gone, but the father stayed. He was still entertaining me daily with his song, and I could spot him. And then suddenly he saw that a blue jay has appeared. Would that be the problem?
Blue jays are nest predators, but cardinals and blue jays have been together for a long time, and so I doubt it's the blue jay per se. It's more likely that cats in the area maybe, or a Cooper's hawk. I mean, blue jays will eat the young out of their nests, but cardinals are pretty hardy, and so yeah. I imagine it's something else.
All right. I'm going to keep watching for them. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Well, cardinals, they're one of those birds that mate for life, right?
Well— Probably not.
So oh, probably
they're
not.
Probably okay. They're probably changing quite a bit, and there's probably a lot of hanky panky going around with the females sneaking off with other males. So
okay, if there is a pair and something happens to one of them, then the other one will go off and find somebody else.
Yeah, probably really quickly. So
all right. Oh well. All right. That's good enough. Let's go to somebody on I-57, I believe, here, line number two. Hello.
Yeah. Hi. This is Jim.
Hi.
Hi, longtime Illinois resident. Just moved to Minnesota near the Twin Cities and noticed that my favorite cardinals have a little bit of a different song. And listening to your guest earlier, he had mentioned something about songs are adaptive. Now, would that be the case, why I'm noticing that?
Yep. So in most birds, not all birds, songs learned. So they learn their songs from the male usually. And so you can get these regional dialects, just like we have dialects. In the United States, cardinals have dialects and other birds have dialects. And so you're right. So just as people talk a little different up there in Minnesota, the cardinals are going to vocalize a little bit different. And it's a sexual selection kind of thing where the females learn that the sexiest ones sound like this, and then the males try to sound like that. And so you kind of get this variation based on kind of what the females want. And that can vary from, you know, Louisiana to California or whatever. So, yeah, you're correct. They sound a little bit different.
Okay, now is that still the northern cardinal?
Yep.
I mean, the northern cardinal is what's in Illinois, correct?
Yep, so the northern cardinal goes from a little bit north of where Minnesota all the way down to mid-Mexico. So it's all the northern cardinal, yep.
Okay, and then one more comment. We were recently down in the Shawnee and saw what seemed like an abundance of the pileated woodpeckers. They were everywhere in the woodlands down there. They were, you know, great. They're good birds to watch. They're big and...
Yep, they're doing great. Yeah, their populations are rebounding, and the Shawnee is a great place to see them. There's a lot of them down there. So,
yeah, good. Well, good show. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I guess that's one of these birds that there are some people who say, maybe some people who think that they've seen an ivory bill.
Yeah.
That's actually what they're seeing, this
that would be my guess.
Woodpecker.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them around, and they can be hard to see. They're kind of wary of people, but, you know, people aren't used to seeing a bird that's, you know, that tall and that big, and so... Your mind wanders, and you kind of think ivory billman is probably piloted. So.
Yeah, all right. Next caller is line three in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I have what may be a silly question. A friend of mine assured me that we really do have or get hummingbirds in Champaign, and so I bought a hummingbird feeder, which I have not put up yet, but I'm just wondering if we get hummingbirds, how long are they around?
Yep, we sure do get hummingbirds. I saw one a couple days ago. They showed up maybe two weeks ago. And the one we have here is ruby-throated hummingbird. And they'll nest in your backyard. They like nectar. And so if you put a hummingbird feeder out, and they'll come to it. I have one nesting probably in my neighbor's yard, but one in our neighborhood. They'll hang around probably till August or so, and they'll migrate back down to Central America. So,
okay.
Yeah, you should be able to get one in your yard.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, all right. I think that actually maybe surprises people. I was, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe about 20 years ago, that I saw the first one in a place that I was living here in Champaign-Urbana, and I was just, I was so surprised. Somehow, I guess it just didn't occur to me that we would have hummingbirds.
Oh, yeah. Now, no, there's good populations. In fact, there's suggestions they're actually increasing because people are actually landscaping their yard with more flowers, more nectar, and so there's quite a few around. And, you know, this is one of these amazing birds that goes down to Louisiana and then flies across the Gulf of Mexico, 1,000 kilometers. And it's a little bitty thing. You know, it weighs like as much as a couple quarters. I mean, it's just nothing to it. And they're, you know, they're going to go back down to Central America, and they'll probably come back up to your same yard if they like your yard the next year.
Yeah, and certainly if you put out a feeder, you will see them. Otherwise, there are certain kinds of flowers that they're particularly attracted to. So if you've got the right thing, you'll definitely
see
it.
It might take you a couple weeks. It takes them a while to find the feeder sometimes, and so don't get discouraged if they don't show up in the first week. They'll find it.
Okay. We have a couple of minutes here. We have some other callers. I do want to get in an email question here. Someone was interested. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about places you could go in the state of Illinois where you're likely to see, you know, good, high-diversity, concentrated
birds. Yeah.
Birds, yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. The Cheyenne National Forest down in southern Illinois, Cache River area. That's great for a lot of forest birds, and also there's some good wetland swamps down there. So going down just south of Carbondale, there's lots of great parks down there. In central Illinois, the Chautauqua National Wildlife Refuge over by Havana, Illinois, they get huge concentrations of ducks and shorebirds. There's also some nice forests over there, Sand Ridge Forest. Around Champaign, you know, just Busey Woods here in Urbana is a great place to see migratory birds. There's several books out there, kind of where to find birds in Illinois. Pretty much anywhere in Illinois that you are, there's within an hour drive, there's a really good area for concentration. Chicago, lakefront's great. Mississippi River up by Galena, there's some really good areas up there. Pio Marquette State Park down by St. Louis, that place, it's pretty flooded right now, but that's a great area for lots of water birds and forest birds.
Yeah, okay. And as you said at the beginning of the program, also particularly this time of year, look around, and if we get through a period where there's been a lot of rain and there's places where there's standing water, that's going to attract birds that are passing.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of gems out there. I mean, stuff you don't realize. I mean, from one day to the next, a lot of rain can turn something great, or a farm field that someone put into a CRP, into Conservation Reserve, turns into grassland. All of a sudden, you got meadowlarks, bobwinks out there. So birds are moving around all the time, and so you can find these gems out there that have lots of good diversity sometimes.
Okay. The calls, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
We were going by Kaufman Lake the other day, and we saw this tree that was full of big white birds. I think they were great white egrets. There were 13 of them, and I never in my life thought they would be in Illinois.
Yep.
Am I crazy?
You're correct. They're the great egrets. This is a triumph for the Clean Water Act. So they used to be endangered in Illinois and threatened in Illinois. We cleaned up our waterways, and great egrets are really coming back. Now, they don't probably nest in Champaign County, but they're probably on their way to Chicagoland area. They're definitely probably great egrets. There's actually a couple species of egrets, but in Champaign, it was probably the great egret. And it's a big white bird. You can't really mistake it. And
their populations
are doing great.
All right. Well, I just wanted confirmation that I hadn't just, you know, lost my mind.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go on here to a caller in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
I hope that that's me.
Yes.
Just a quick question. We have a cabin out in the country on a pond, and I've been out there several times, and we got a lady duck that's a mallard, I'm sure, that's got a nest with 8 or 9 eggs in it or so. But I have seen no sign of the drake. Now, at all, anytime I've been out there. Now, what's the chance that those eggs are fertile if, you know, what's the deal?
It's probably a pretty good chance those eggs are fertile. Waterfowl are notorious for their fathers not being very good fathers, per se. So there's lots of hanky-panky, like I said. So she might have mated with a male that went somewhere else. And so a lot of times in waterfowl, the females are left to take care of the young by themselves. It's unlikely she would lay 8 infertile eggs. I bet they're fertile, and they could actually be from a couple of different fathers, which is kind of common in some waterfowl.
Okay. Well, so I will have to watch for those little ducklings. They're cute.
Good.
Thank you.
Yep,
right,
no problem.
Very good. Thank you. And on to someone in Indiana on our line 4. Hello.
Hi. A couple of quickies. I live a little bit east of Purdue University in the confluence of the Wabash River and a smaller river called the Erie. And we have eagles and ospreys now. It's been a long period of planning for it, but they're all over the place. We've run into this thing, though, people who are still working in the 50s mentality. We have an area of low brush and stuff like that, and we had a fella come through and had to cut it all down because it didn't look nice. Yep. And what he did, but he didn't know he was doing it, he was ruining the habitat of thrushes. And so a number of us descended upon the young man and explained to him, right there is a baby thrush, 2.5 feet off the ground. And there's nothing protecting her because you've cut it all down and makes it, you know, very easy for cats to show up and things like that. I'm just wondering if you've had probably yourself over in Illinois and just wanted to bring it to attention to people who may be interested in the trails. We're doing a lot of trails between different counties, old Indian trails and locomotive trails, as far as that goes. I just wanted to bring that up. Somebody doesn't know about it, but don't forget the birds that nest close to the ground, not right. only up in the trees or down the ground, but the ones close to the ground. They need that weed area, too.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's the big thing in our book where we're trying to promote that everything doesn't need to be clean. So you don't need to clean everything up. You can let stuff be messy. Just don't clean everything up. Let some brush be out there because that's going to promote bird populations. There's no reason we need to have this mentality out there, the culture of mowing everything, cleaning everything up. Leave some stuff messy. It's going to be and only if a certain percentage of people do that, it's going to be a big benefit to birds. So, I'm a big advocate on leaving stuff messy. So.
And if particularly this time of year, if you're interested in trying to attract some birds to your yard, you know that there are going to be birds passing through. Maybe you'd just like to be able to look out your window and see what you can see. What kind of things can people do?
Yeah, planting native shrubs is always good. I'm just trying to get some landscape out there. I started a no-mow area in my backyard where I'm just trying to let stuff grow up for the wrens, the thrushes, the thrashers. My wife's not a very big proponent of that, but I'm mowing the yard, so it's going to stay unmowed until she goes and mows it. So, the idea with that is we're trying to promote, so that Red Start that guy saw, that's in your yard for a day. And all it needs is to get enough bugs in it to eat in order to make the next journey to Wisconsin. And so maybe you're not providing habitat for nesting, but you're just providing that kind of messiness where there's some moths, some crickets, that kind of stuff. And so that's what we're really trying to promote out there. Just take a little corner of your yard and just let it for the wildlife. Let it grow up. You know, it's not going to get out of control, and it might provide that needed food for some bird.
Yeah, well, if they like messiness, they certainly should like my yard.
Yeah.
I want to say thanks very much, Mike, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Michael Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, and he's also a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and occasionally he's here, and we talk about birds. We're on the web at WILL.illinois.edu. You can go there and you can look at our website. If you'd like to check out the schedule for this show, find out what we'll be doing in the days ahead. You can catch up on past programs. You can listen that way, and all of our local production is there. So if you haven't checked out our website recently, do that, WILL.illinois.edu. We will take a break, as we usually do at this point. We can bring you an update on the markets. We'll have some news. Then in hour two, Dr. Malcolm Hill will be here. He's a pediatrician. We'll be talking about children's health.